choices, new players, new models of care. You know consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer first health is the evolution. Status quo or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Hey, welcome back to the leading podcast about consumer health innovations. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. We have the flavor of the week about the second trend in McKinsey's latest Consumer Insights report. Knowing that consumers are more willing to trust us with their data than we once thought, can we use that data to improve their experience before, during, and after patient encounters? And what does that require from provider organizations and the health tech solution providers that serve them? I'll talk about that. Then we're excited to welcome Evan Richardson, CEO and founder of Form Health. We dive into the current state of metabolic health in America, GLP-1s, Form Health's newly announced partnership with Eli Lilly, and how it all impacts everyday people on their journeys to health and wellness. It's another jam-packed episode, so it's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go.
Flavor of the week.
Healthcare consumers are willing to trust us with their data if we use it to improve their experience. McKinsey's latest Consumer Insights report has so much to sink our teeth into that I split up my commentary into three parts, following the report's three trends. In our last episode, I covered trend number one, that consumers are spending more on health and wellness but are not satisfied and want more innovation. So next, let's dive into trend number two. Consumers trust the healthcare industry with their data, but organizations underuse it. The report explains that the healthcare industry continues to earn the trust of consumers with 44% of surveyed consumers indicating that they're willing to voluntarily share personal and health data with healthcare organizations, more than double the rate for technology or retail organizations. However, unlike tech organizations, which have focused for more than a decade on using personal data to optimize service and support, healthcare organizations have largely not expanded their use of personal and health data to deliver a differentiated experience across the healthcare journey. So how do consumers want their health data to be used? More than half of surveyed consumers expressed interest in using their personal data to manage chronic conditions, receive personalized health and well-being insights, or receive personalized product and insurance recommendations. Healthcare organizations could employ the latest technology, for example, remote monitoring, AI, or integrated EHRs, to use consumer data in a safe, controlled way that follows privacy, security, and local and industry regulations on data handling. This could improve both the consumer experience and streamline operations. I thought that was an interesting part, and my guess is that they hope to bypass the blockers who like to rain on the data parade. The report then says that to effectively respond to this trend, healthcare organizations can embed personalization into the end-to-end consumer experience by using their consumer data assets and developing AI capabilities, including generative AI. Healthcare organizations could consider applying this approach to improve patient access through innovative strategies, including the following: customizing engagement interfaces such as landing pages, email campaigns, education initiatives, and scheduling appointments based on consumer attitudes, behaviors, preferences, and healthcare needs, and recommending an appointment in a care setting that works best for the patient in the time frame needed and with the appropriate clinician. The report concludes by saying that finally, to get the full value from this technology and data, it's critical that organizations adopt an end-to-end transformation mindset. I mean, how long have we been saying that on this program, right? This includes implementing transformation best practices, such as setting a clear roadmap enforced by an operating model that holds leaders accountable for change, hiring dedicated talent, and launching change management to promote adoption and scaling. So it sounds like, in general, provider organizations and the health tech solution providers supporting them can expand their vision for how to use personal healthcare data and create specific, personalized encounters at a lot more points along a health or wellness journey than maybe we have been seeing up until now from the primarily clinical viewpoint. Apparently, we're just scratching the surface. Let's dedicate more time to exploring what's possible with data-driven personalized encounters before, during, and after a patient experience, knowing that consumers are more on board than we might have once thought. That's another way that we'll build the healthcare of tomorrow, and that's the flavor of the week.
The flow.
All right, everyone, let's get into the flow. Please give it up. We have such a special guest today. Today, we've got Evan Richardson with us. Evan's the founder and CEO of Form Health. So today, we're going to dive into the current state of metabolic health in America. We're going to talk about GLP-1s. Let's go there. We're going to talk about Form Health's newly announced partnership with Eli Lilly through Lilly Direct and how it all impacts everyday people on their journeys to health and wellness. So much to cover here. Let's get started. Evan, welcome to the Healthcare Wrap.
Thank you very much, guys. Really excited to be here.
Zane, I know you're really excited about this interview, too, and I wondered if there's something particular that you want to get out of this, and then we'll have Evan introduce himself a little more.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, obviously, in the United States, we suffer here with metabolic health. I was actually looking at a map of life expectancy this morning, and you know, certainly in the southern states, there's like a 20-year difference between there and other parts of the U.S., and so really interested in diving into this, and also the whole concept of partnership. You know, Jared, on this show, we've been talking a lot about how and where digital health companies are partnering with maybe less traditional partners, be it health systems or now pharmaceutical companies directly. And so hoping to hear from Evan on some of those things, how they've thought about it, and maybe start to make some predictions for where the whole future of this industry is going to go. And so happy to have you here.
Thanks, Zane. Excited to be here.
Yeah, Evan, give us like the 2-minute version of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I've been in the health care technology space for a while now, over a decade. Started early on with one of the sort of bigger companies to move through the first round of sort of this iteration of health tech, which was Castlight. Joined them when they were in the sort of sub 100 employees phase. And gosh, you know, we were all fresh faced with this wild idea that if we just could tell people how much their care would cost, then that would solve all of healthcare's problems. And you know, here we are a decade later, and I think now really kind of on the third wave of price transparency. When I was at HLTH late last year, there were at least 3 or 4 companies in the kind of startup pit area that were bringing a revolutionary idea that you could know your price before you got treatment. I said, guys, I hope it works out this time. We've been down this road a few different times in healthcare. Got, as is always the case, right? You have a journey professionally, and from that slice of time, really saw the insight that while patients care a lot about their pocketbook after the fact, the thing that patients are often really focused on is quality. That insight is care quality. That insight drove my next company, helped start a company called Grand Rounds, which is now called Included Health, as the leader in telenav or healthcare navigation services and teleprimary care. Was there with Owen Tripp, the CEO, and Rusty Hoffman, the medical co-founder. And we built that company over the course of about 6-7 years while I was there, sat in a bunch of different roles, which was incredibly valuable, from running product to running data science, a little bit of time dabbling in marketing, running operations, sat as interim CFO for a while, and then spun out there, moved my family back to the East Coast, and shortly thereafter started Form Health, which is now the largest provider of obesity specialty care in the world.
It's fascinating. I do love hearing about people's paths, because I have yet to find the person who was like as a young child knew exactly what they wanted to do in healthcare and just went straight there in their path. So yeah, you know, a little facetious, yeah. But yeah, it just, you know, it doesn't happen. So I love that.
Well, as a 6 or 7 year old, I was probably later than that, I guess as a 5th grader, I remember writing an essay and I said I wanted to be a marketing manager for a liquor company, which sounds like a weird thing for a 5th grader to say, but that was my dad's job. That was what I wanted to be at the time. And, years later, I have yet to actually set foot in the spirits marketing industry.
Well, that's quite a bit different than what you're doing today. Evan, could you tell us a little bit then about Form Health? Like specifically, what is it that you all do? What are the services that you provide? How are some of those services provided? Our audience would love to hear that.
Absolutely. So Form Health has been around for, about 5 years now. And, you know, we have always had one mission. When we had been focused on growing the company and on helping patients, that single mission is to provide the highest quality obesity care that we possibly could, and to do that for as many people around the country as possible. Today, Form Health is, as I mentioned, the largest provider of telemedical subspecialty obesity care. And that's that, like, we use those words carefully, because there's a lot of people out there today that will say, hey, I can write you a prescription that'll help you lose weight. That's really different from what we do. We talked about the fact that we'd be here whether the GLP-1 revolution had happened or not. And we started long before those medications were sort of in broad part of the zeitgeist or part of the popular conversation. we work with patients who are dealing with the condition of obesity or meet the medical definition of requiring medical care for their weight. That's typically folks with a BMI of 27 or higher and weight-related comorbidities.
I wonder if I meet that definition.
Well, you know, a BMI of 27 or higher and weight-related comorbidities, and some of those are named. So things like hypertension, hyperlipidemia, high blood sugar, et cetera, et cetera. And we work with them in a holistic model to help them to achieve their broader healthcare goals, including things like weight loss, but also broader health. And when I say a holistic model, I think it's really important to understand that there's a lot that goes into high-quality obesity care that isn't a jab in the abdomen. The first thing that we do is we spend a lot of time with the patients looking at comorbidities. So, you know, there are a number of comorbidities that drive weight gain or what's called obesogenic. So these are comorbidities like sleep apnea, PCOS, some behavioral challenges like depression. All of these things can cause patients as a side effect to gain weight. We diagnose new obesogenic comorbidities in about a fifth of our patients when they come on, and we treat those obesogenic comorbidities in a significant portion of our population. We also work with patients and their existing care team to make sure that patients aren't on obesogenic medications. One example is if a patient's taking Prozac, on average, they'll typically gain about 20 pounds per year for the first 3 years that they're on Prozac. So just taking Prozac will actually cause the average person to become obese. So we work with patients and their existing care providers to move them off of obesogenic medications where possible to, in this case, shift to a non-obesogenic SSRI, things like that. And then we work really closely and pretty actively with patients on dietetic changes, on activity changes, and on behavioral health changes. So, you know, that means, of course, you know, changing what you eat. That means, of course, you know, finding ways to be more active. And, you know, these are always things that are very specific to an individual person. I think one thing that's always the case is that, you know, obesity is not the same challenge for any patient, and everybody's different. And if you think about it, a 30-year-old male with a BMI of 40 who's never tried to lose weight and is otherwise healthy is a very different patient, has very different metabolic requirements for weight loss than, you know, a 52-year-old perimenopausal woman that's been dieting since she was 18, right? Just those factors alone make a very different patient. And then, you know, we wrap around that, when it's appropriate, medication. And those medications really can vary. Of course, GLP-1s have been all over the news, but many of our patients are on other medications that can be high impact when they're part of holistic care. So that's what we do. And what you hear me say there a lot is holistic care. And that's because obesity and high BMI generally is a condition that doesn't have a single cause. It's a condition that for each individual is pretty different. And in order to kind of unravel the complexities, you really have to treat each person as an individual. That's what we do. We're reimbursed by all the major carriers. We work with a number of large employers to provide high quality care to their employees, and we drive results. Our patients typically get about 2 to 3x better results using Form or working with Form than the data would suggest they would see if they were with a PCP or with, you know, some other sort of non-specialty provider of care. We drive results, we drive retention, and ultimately patients are pretty happy about that. Our net promoter score amongst our patients is about 85, which in the healthcare industry is something to be proud of.
Usually net promoter scores in healthcare are negative, usually from the research I've seen.
I remember, yeah, we were very proud at a company that I worked at a long time ago in the healthcare space, because our NPS, while very negative, was still better than the carriers. And so we said, all right, well, hey, we're doing something right here. We're going in the right direction. But you're right. I think, you know, high NPS scores are a challenge. But when you can help patients to make progress on something that is important to them, something that they feel and see every day, and something that really materializes in other aspects of their health, they're pretty thrilled with that.
Wonderful. Maybe taking just a step back for a minute, I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people that would listen to this podcast understand that there's a big issue in this country around obesity, metabolic health, you name it. But curious, Evan, you know, since it sounds like you've been a serial digital health entrepreneur, was there something that, you know, happened in your journey or some story or some founding story that said, hey, this is the next thing I want to focus on? How did you even decide that Form Health is what you want to do?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think people will talk often about, well, gee, you shouldn't start a company if you can get to sleep at night without thinking about kind of the opportunity that's sitting in front of you. And I think for some folks, that's true. I think for me stepping into this space, it was not so much a bolt out of the blue or a kind of overwhelming obsession as it was just seeing the accumulation of information and opportunity over a long period of time. I looked at starting an obesity treatment back in about 2009, looked at spinning out from a local hospital here, Johnson Diabetes, a program that's called Why Wait. Dug into that, found that from a business perspective at that point in time, it didn't work, but boy, did they have fantastic outcomes. I think that turned me on to the opportunity, the impact that high quality care can have for individuals that are seeking treatment. And then I went away and then did a bunch of other things, right? I was at Castline, started at Grand Rounds, et cetera, et cetera. And when I came back and when I was looking and starting to think about what was next, that opportunity was always there, but it just became clearer and clearer and clearer that a lot of important things had changed. And that while the impact of high quality care was still as obvious as ever, now everybody had a supercomputer in their pocket, right? Their cell phone. That wasn't the case back in 2009. Now folks were starting to get used to the notion of remote and asynchronous care. That wasn't the case back in 2009. Now there was a subspecialty of care for obesity. The American Board of Obesity Medicine that was recognized, and there was reimbursement for care. And then kind of whispered about, kind of off in the distance, there was these GLP-1s, right? That maybe those were going to even turbocharge things. And to me, that just felt like it was a period of change for a pretty intractable problem that folks had faced for a long time. And that was, the inexorable growth of obesity and overweight in the U.S. and internationally. And if it was very clear to me, if you could find a scalable solution for that condition and for that disease state, you could absolutely drive something really incredible. And it wasn't really clear how we were going to get there or what that solution was going to be. And if you looked at the very first pitch deck, it looked pretty different than the company form is today, as is always the case. But I think that to me, opportunity often sits in those areas that are experiencing a ton of change. And the thing that was clear to me back in 2019 when I started looking at starting this company was, we were in for a lot of change in the world of obesity care, and that was going to create a lot of opportunity.
That's wonderful. So Sam, what I'm hearing then is, you just decided to finally act when the confluence of all these different trends came together and boom.
That's right.
It was time to manifest Form Health. Wanted to ask a little bit, I know you've walked through your programs a little bit, but more from a technology perspective, would love to hear, I guess the term would be channels. Like, what are the channels that patients then interact with Form Health? I would imagine there's probably synchronous and asynchronous telehealth. Is there like a platform that people are logging into? What does that look like?
Form Health is entirely remote. That is, there's not a place to come to. There's no physical location. Sometimes our patients do need to go for lab tests or things like that, and we'll send them to a lab core or a local in-hospital lab or something like that. There's not a physical place to go to. Everything happens through the app. Patients interact synchronously with their physician about once a month, with their dietitian about twice a month. And then a lot of stuff, Zane, to your point, a lot of stuff happens asynchronously, right? They're tapping with their thumbs a lot. They'll talk to their care team about 8 times a week. So it's pretty high intensity interaction for weight loss. And I think, for me, thinking about what's really changed and, kind of back to your earlier question of why is the opportunity happening now, this opportunity, this ability for us to go with patients anywhere they are and to take this kind of high touch service, with you in your pocket 24 hours a day has actually been really important to the outcomes we've been able to achieve. When we can walk on, as part of a video visit with a patient into their pantry and talk through what's there, when they can text us at 2 in the morning, not because we'll necessarily be there responding at 2 in the morning, but they can text us and say, hey, like, here's a moment that I'm really struggling with something that's been a big challenge. Those are transformational moments for patients that you couldn't achieve in a brick and mortar setting where, you're going to see that patient, they're going to go away for 3 months at the most, or sorry, at the least, they're going to go away for 3 months. Sometimes they'll go away for 12 months and then we'll see them again for a touch point of 15 minutes and come back. That's been pretty transformational. So it's all through the app. A lot of it is synchronous. A lot of it is asynchronous interaction with the care team. And then, of course, there's a lot of, broader digital support, right? Where you don't have to have a person that's there and interacting to actually drive behavior change. Every patient has a digital scale. They step on that pretty frequently every other day or so. And then, of course, a lot of education, a lot of food logging and tracking, a lot of, behavior reminders are all things that we can push through the person's device. And, because it's always there with them, they're much more likely to see that than they might have been to, read the mailer that got sent home, 2 weeks after my appointment with reminders on behavior change, et cetera. So I think that's kind of the model to think of. It is a It's a human-centered model. What we have seen from our data is patients really do need that level of specificity. The patients really do benefit from having, you know, other team members who care about them, who are focused on their journey, and who help to keep them on track. And that, you know, having that person there as a counterparty is actually a lot more impactful oftentimes than just having, you know, a readout that says, oh, you've met your goals for the last 3 days. Congratulations, right? We hear a lot in our space about, gamification, right? And, we're going to give you little digital rewards and that's going to do everything you need to change your behavior. The reality is, while those things can help for sure, in certain cases, they're not an end-all be-all. I think for a lot of folks, you know, everything has become now so gamified that, in a lot of cases, it just doesn't matter.
Sure. You're kind of answering my next question already, Evan, but I'll throw it out there again. Seems like what I'm hearing in what you're saying, kind of secrets to success in digital chronic disease management. We've also had Wei Li Show on the show from Omada Health, and we asked him the same question, particularly as you all have, you know, significant engagement scores, net promoter scores. How have you intentionally baked in, I presume it's, you know, a design dimension to keep people engaged in the platform and continue on? It seems like a lot of digital health leaders we chat with that are more on like the simple telehealth side, you know, really struggle. Like people use their product maybe once or twice, but don't stick with it for the longevity needed to see real impact. And so curious how you and your product team have thought about designing a product where people, you know, stick with it. That seems to be the issue.
It's a huge challenge for a lot of aspects of digital health. And I would argue that it is especially acute for those platforms that have said, we can impact a lot more folks with a fully digital solution. And even if we impact each of those folks to a smaller amount, boy, if we're impacting a lot of folks, then that's going to give us a bigger net benefit. One of the biggest things that we do that helps drive that retention, and gosh, you know, we've got pretty gaudy retention numbers. We're sitting at about 40% retention after 3 years, right? So patients that have been with us for 3 years are still sort of, you know, almost half of them are still around on the platform. And that is extraordinary in our space. Many traditional behavioral weight loss programs will have things like, you know, have numbers like 90% attrition after 90 days. You know, other medication-based programs are looking at similar numbers after 6 or 9 months. That is, they will have lost, you know, 9 out of 10 patients after 6 or 9 months. And a big part, I think, of what we're able to do is driven off of the fact that, you know, patients are motivated by the interactions with their team members. A big part of what we're able to accomplish on the retention side is based off of the fact that patients recognize that the level of insights that they're getting, that the kind of support that they're getting, whether it's from the humans on the other side of their care team or whether it's from the digital tools on the other side of their care team, that those are pretty pretty different from what they'd see elsewhere. And then, you know, I think the fact that it's a truly medical program makes a difference too, right? You know, let's take a different example. Patients who are being treated by their endocrinologist for type 2 diabetes, they show up to those appointments, right? Like they will go back, they'll see that doctor year after year after year because they know that the physician interactions are truly important, right? They may not be logging their blood sugars every day, but they'll go to those physician visits. And I think, you know, that's a big part of what we see is because we really are providing the full scope medical care for those patients. We are treating comorbidities. We are interacting with their broader care team. We are providing medications and writing those scripts and renewals. All of those aspects just make it a more significant component of the patient's life. And then when you layer on top of that great outstanding outcomes, it gives the patients a lot more reason to stick around.
Yeah. Well, I guess to use the overused business adage, it sounds like you're the one-stop shop to deal with this issue, and that drives your engagement.
One-stop shop sometimes makes people think about like 7-Eleven or something like that, where you can get a bunch of different things and they're all kind of like so-so quality. For us, you know, we think about it as holistic care. And in the world of obesity and overweight, because this is not a disease where changing one molecule in a person's body is going to change that disease state, you have to impact a bunch of different areas of how they interact with the world, of how active they are, of how they think about themselves, right? You have to change a lot of these things. Well, as a result, you can't just have sort of a single point of change that's going to drive real outcomes there. You have to be that wraparound care. You have to be that holistic provider.
Yeah, Evan, naturally, when for our longtime listeners, they know this about us. We like to just talk about what's happening outside of the traditional healthcare system. And so things like this are really intriguing to us. And naturally, that means we saw the announcement recently with Eli Lilly of their end-to-end digital healthcare experience through Lilly Direct. Can you tell us about that role and like where FormHealth plays into that partnership?
This has been something that we have been excited to be a part of, and we've built this relationship with Lilly over a pretty lengthy period of time. Within the world of Lilly Direct, we are a high quality care provider for obesity treatment that sort of sits on that platform. And, you know, I think what's really interesting is our care model is identical for those patients that happen to come to us through Lilly Direct and for those patients that happen to come to us because their friend recommended them or because their PCP referred them in or because their employer has selected us as a benefits provider, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And digging in further, what I mean there is there's no change in the care that patient receives. There's no change in the prescribing patterns for those patients. And in point of fact, our physicians actually don't know where any of their patients come from, right? They see a patient, they interact with them, they drive high quality care. But I think, you know, what has been really exciting for us about being part of Lilly Direct is obviously it's a great platform that allows us to deliver high quality care to a lot more folks using whatever tools for care, sometimes including medication, whatever tools for care are most appropriate for that patient and are covered by the insurance.
So I'm curious, you know, where the, we'd refer to it, you know, in our marketing language is value proposition, you know, right? Like kind of what does everyone get out of it, you know, on the Lilly side and on the Form side?
Yeah. Well, I can certainly speak on the Form side. What we are excited about with this relationship is we are able to broadcast that Form message to a much wider audience. We are able to interact with even more people. And when we interact with them, you know, we have, because of sort of the path to discovery and because of our, you know, improved brand visibility, we have even more credibility in interacting with those patients. So it improves our ability to deliver high quality care to even more folks. On the Lilly side, whether it's Lilly specific or not, because obviously I can't speak for Lilly, but what I can tell you is, you know, I think every entity in this broader industry has a real interest in seeing more high quality care delivered to more folks. And that is the case no matter where you sit in the value chain. The reason that we get a chance to have relationships like this is because we're providing ABOM, American Board of Obesity Medicine, subspecialty care. We're doing that at scale and we're driving fantastic results. And we're doing that in an environment where patients can actually stay on therapy as opposed to going off, which, you know, unfortunately is the experience of a lot of patients that they'll be able to do it for a few months and then not be able to stay on therapy. And I think, you know, for all those reasons, we're driving better outcomes and driving better quality care. And I think, again, whether it's Lilly or anybody else in the value chain, we all have a real strong incentive to see more high quality care delivered to more patients.
So there are lots of other ways clearly out there to address obesity, and one of them being GLP-1s. They're out there, you know, there's a lot of talk. I'm just curious, like what you think about them in general?
There's clearly, from a societal and scientific and health impact, GLP-1s are one of the most important discoveries that has happened in the last, I would argue, 50 years. Clinically, our perspective is that for patients where they're appropriate, these can be really incredible tools. And at the same time, they're just like any medication, they're not appropriate for every patient. You know, and there's some really obvious cases of that. As an example, there's black box warnings for women who are maybe pregnant for GLP-1s, right? But then there's a lot of other patients where other tools may be more appropriate for them. And so, you know, I think for us, as a company, the way we look at this, again, is, I know I sound like a broken record, but it's back to that holistic approach to care, right? For those patients where these are appropriate medications, they can be really, really important tools. And, you know, we write a fair number of them.
You know, another aspect of it, I guess, is something we ask a lot about, which is when you're talking to the incumbent health system leader, which are, you know, quite a few of our listeners here, it's the genuine question of like, how would we partner? You know, how would we work together to achieve some of our joint goals here? And so that's one thing we always like to ask about, just in terms of like whether FormHealth is open, like whether that's part of the model of partnering with incumbent care models when you're talking about more traditional health systems, if that's kind of part of the path, if that makes sense for an entry point or an engagement point with patients. What's your take on how that type of partnership works?
We got our start working with a lot of physicians as, you know, a specialty referral. And we've worked with hospital systems in the past as a group that doesn't necessarily sit inside the four walls, but can integrate really well with a lot of the other care areas that they provide care for. And it turns out, of course, obesity impacts a lot of different areas, from fertility to cardiac to orthopedic and on and on and on. This is the nature of metabolic disease, that the complications of metabolic disease over time impact almost every organ system in the body. And so, yeah, absolutely. You know, we work with folks often when we do that. It's as a, you know, as a referral acceptor, I guess you might say, right? Where we are able to integrate closely with their different provider groups. We're able to, you know, work with patients to help them to achieve broader goals, and then integrate them back in to the health system when that's appropriate. An example is, you know, gosh, we have spent and continue to spend a lot of time with fertility providers, and, you know, they need to help their patients to pretty quickly achieve weight loss goals. Sometimes just losing weight can actually drive fertility for a couple, which is really exciting, right? We have dozens and dozens now of formed babies that they aren't just formed by themselves, obviously, right? Because they're working with a fertility provider. Yeah, but it's exciting, right? For many folks, you got to hit a certain BMI before you can do IVF. For other folks, just losing that weight can actually help you to become much more fertile. We work with the providers refer the patients to us. We work with them to help them make those weight loss goals happen, and often happen on an accelerated timeline, because for many folks, age is an issue, and each month that passes actually makes fertility more challenging. And then when it's appropriate, we put them back into that fertility process, and they're able to make a lot of progress.
That's amazing. So what if things go right? It's so easy to say, like, what if things go wrong? What if people don't engage? What if people don't find the solution? What if you just ultimately don't move forward with it? But what if things go right? What if you continue to get more people engaged with solutions like what you're doing, and we do make progress, and we can, you know, are we looking back a few years from now? I'm just curious what that future looks like to you in terms of like what you're driving towards.
There's a huge opportunity for material improvement in the average level of societal health that is related to weight care, that is related to broader cardiometabolic disease. And everything that we do is really closely tied in there. I think today there is, you know, this incredible tension in the space. And I think that has been born from the excitement that patients feel around some of these medications, combined with what I can only term sort of a gold rush from a lot of providers or from a lot of groups that may or may not have care quality in mind. I think about, you know, folks that are providing medications that claim to be one thing that they're not, whether that's from a compounding pharmacy or other places. I think about folks that are really focused on speed to script, that is speed to getting a medication in a patient, as opposed to driving holistic healthcare results over time. And so, you know, I see this tension, and I think that, you know, this is going to be kind of the conversation over the next couple of years. What is appropriate care in this space? We have expectations for, as an example, what is appropriate fertility care? We have expectations for what's, you know, appropriate cardiac care as a society, right? Now, there's things where you'd say, gosh, that's crazy, I wouldn't do that. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of that in this space today. You know, the world of compounding, as an example, is a world where, you know, patients go online, they talk to somebody with uncertain credentials, they get something shipped in the mail, and they inject themselves with it. And that's a crazy spot to be in. And right now, that's for a lot of folks, that's a viable solution. And I think, you know, that's something that we are going to have to deal with over the next couple of years. I think that's one of the things that really is in tension right now. But when things go right, we are poised as a society to reverse the single biggest killer of human beings on the planet, and that's cardiometabolic disease. And we now have tools that we never had before, and we are making advances like all the time. Every quarter, something dramatic changes. You know, this quarter, there was a material change to the Wegovy label. It's now a medication for cardiac care as well as for weight care. You know, a couple quarters ago, Zepbound came to market for the first time. And you can go back and you can look, and every 60 to 90 days, there's a material evolution in this space. And so I think we will have more tools. We will have much broader penetration and access to care, penetration within the patient population and access to care, and we will have far better outcomes. And I think that, you know, 7 to 10 years, we will look back on this time, and we will look back on the kind of the 2010s and the run up to 2020 as this bizarre time when everybody knew that we had this really important population health challenge in obesity, and we weren't able to do anything about it. And, you know, here, as we've gotten into the 2020s, all of that has changed, and we're now on a tremendously different societal trajectory.
Oh, let's get there. Let's make it happen. Evan, if there's one last message that you could share, if there's one thing you could convey to consumers everywhere who are struggling somewhere to navigate their own health, what would you say to them?
I think it's the same message that I would have shared if you'd asked me any time over the last decade. And that is, for those folks that are struggling to navigate the healthcare system, because gosh, it's complex. There's so many different things that can go right and things that can go wrong. And outcomes are really hard to judge, right? Because we don't have a counterfactual. We don't know what might have happened. I think the single most important thing for patients is to focus on the quality of their care providers, to focus on the quality of the care that they're receiving, and not to focus on, you know, the specific treatment, not to focus on, you know, a procedure or medication, et cetera, but to really focus on what's the quality of care that's provided by the group that's delivering that care. You will have great outcomes within that framework. And I think it's, you know, kind of the one thing that is a lot easier to focus on than, gosh, all of the other details, right? People shouldn't try to be the physician in their healthcare relationship, but they should find really high quality folks to be that.
I love it. A perfect place for us to wrap too, because that gives us something not only to think about, something to aim for, but we truly appreciate your time here. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us, Evan. This has been such a pleasure. That's completely a wrap here. We've had the absolute pleasure of speaking with Evan Richardson from Form Health. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Have a great one.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tell your colleagues to tune in for all the awesomeness, then leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. See our full lineup at shiftforwardhealth.com. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. And remember, we might have a lot of work to do in healthcare, but we'll get there faster together. Thanks again. We'll